and the residents of Hastinapur were unhappy, miserable. We can't even estimate their misery, which in one sense is just another form of ecstasy, because in their separation from Krishna, they were actually with Krishna in those thoughts of him. But it is like the sun going down. When the sun goes down at night, the world is plunged into darkness. But when the sun goes down in one place, it is rising somewhere else. So that which is one person or one place's darkness is the light of another place. So the residents of Hastinapur, the place of the Pandavas, it was heading into the darkness of separation from Krishna. And the residents of Dwarka, who had been experiencing deep separation from Krishna, the mourning of their sun arising, their mourning of the arising sun was now taking place. So the residents of Hastinapur were in great grief, and the residents of Dwarka were in great jubilation. When the citizens, the ladies, the royal ladies of Hastinapur, they stood on the roofs of the houses of Hastinapur, and just gazing at the Lord, they were remembering him. They were looking at him. They were thinking of the wonder of how that Lord, that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the source of everything, who existed before anything existed within the material world, who is the Adi Purush, the Ishwara Parama Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, how he, although all-powerful and omnipotent, he was walking down the streets of their city. And they were remembering the pastimes of the Lord, and how they were remembering especially the fortune, or projecting the fortune of the ladies, the queens especially, of Dwarka, understanding that their fortune was now beginning, the queens of Dwarka, their fortune was now beginning. Because they had such an intimate relationship with Krishna. In the material world, people measure sub and azub, auspiciousness and inauspiciousness, what is good and what is bad, by that which will give them material wealth and sense gratification. But actually, true fortune is only those things that bring us closer to Krishna and awaken our intimate relationship with Krishna, because that type of fortune is eternal fortune. So something that is materially unfortunate, hadishet tadaram sanai, something that is materially unfortunate can be the cause of the greatest fortune. Because again, the only measurement of fortune is the cultivation and development of our eternal relationship with Krishna. This is not some fanatic statement. But actually, when we look at fortune and misfortune, auspiciousness and inauspiciousness from the point of view of eternity, what is the benefit of some material fortune? If someone told us you would be happy for an eighth of a second, how jubilant would we get over that? We wouldn't even have enough time to raise a smile. Especially if we knew that misfortune was following. So similarly, the life of one of Lord Brahma, which is millions and millions and billions of years, and what to speak of our own lives in this body, which exists for such a short period of time. The life of Lord Brahma is compared to the flash of lightning over the ocean, which happens so momentarily. And our problems, are that we take this momentary existence too seriously. We're completely enwrapped, involved in this very temporary existence, and consider that all in all. And on the other hand, we have neglected and we close our eyes to our eternal relationship with Krishna. We have turned our back on that. So this needs to be reversed. What has to be reversed is that we see our eternal life with Krishna as all in all, and we see that this temporary life within this particular body, of which this is just a succession, one of countless numbers of bodies in the past, and if we don't get out of the material world, it's just one of countless numbers of bodies in the future. Well, the soul, me, is eternal. Everyone can perceive the eternality of the soul. Everyone can perceive their own eternality directly. We, of course, can understand this from Shastra. But we can also experience this by remembering so simply, as Krishna says, that it was the same person, me, who was inhabiting a young child's body, and it is the same person, me, that inhabits an old man's body. So there is a continuity of the person while the bodies change. Everyone experiences this. So the Vedic culture was based on this wisdom, this wise man's knowledge. And it was passed on through the culture, through the families, through the traditions, through the disciplic successions. So life was based on this, and people were not willing to sacrifice the eternal for the temporary. And now, because people really, truly have no knowledge beyond the temporary, they accept the temporary as everything. And they're not thinking they're sacrificing the eternal for the temporary. They're thinking that the temporary, what happens right this moment, is everything. And therefore, I should focus my attention simply on that. And the result of such a society is abject misery. Increasingly abject misery. Such futile life, and everyone has this feeling in the material world, though, especially when one gets old. The old people, they become so cynical because they're just thinking, what was my life? What was the value of my life? What was it worth? What did I actually gain? I may have had some peak experiences in my life. I may have gotten some position, some fame, some pleasure here and there. But now it has vanished. What did I actually gain? It is no more than gaining some gold in a dream. So when we gain gold in a dream, we get some pleasure. But soon as we wake up, that gold is gone and our pleasure is gone. Anything that we gain in a dream is vanquished as soon as we wake up. So similarly, everything that we gain in our life is vanquished by time, and towards the end of our life we understand this. So the Vedic culture was based on this, and everything, as we'll hear, leads to this point. The Vedas themselves lead to this point, the dealings between the individuals lead to this point, the dealings in the family lead to this point, the way that guests are greeted bring us to this point. Maybe someone could ask her to speak softly. No, you shouldn't go. Someone. No, you shouldn't go either. You can go. So, when Krishna was leaving Hastinapur, Yudhisthira Maharaj, he engaged four divisions of his army to accompany Lord Krishna. Why? Because the battle of Kurukshetra was over, in one sense, and Yudhisthira was the king, but yet there was enmity. So to protect Lord Krishna, Yudhisthira sent his army men for a great distance with he himself and the Pandavas. But of course we know that on one level Krishna needed that protection because of the enmity that existed, but on another level, who does Krishna need protection from? Krishna is the protector of everyone. He is the supreme protector. He is the supreme powerful and he is the supreme protector. Because he is the supreme powerful and because he is all-knowing, he alone has the capacity to be the protector. So what kind of protection does he need? He can protect himself. So why does the supreme protector take this type of protection from Yudhisthira Maharaj? And the answer is because Yudhisthira Maharaj wanted to offer this as a gesture of affection. Because Yudhisthira wanted to offer it, Krishna was very inclined to accept it. Not that he was afraid and felt that he needed protection, but he was so attracted to the offering of Yudhisthira, who, in his love for Krishna, thought, oh, I must send my armies and go with him myself, just to make sure that everything works out very suitably for his pleasure, that there are no inconveniences. And also on another level, Yudhisthira and the other Pandavas wanted to protect Krishna because it gave them the excuse to go with Krishna. To be with him still another few more days. We can just imagine the love that they were feeling and how much they couldn't even conceive of separation from Krishna, in the sense that they couldn't even conceive of what their life would be like without him. Practically, we can't imagine such love, actually speaking. But we can just try to imagine how deeply intense the affection of the Pandavas was for Krishna. How deeply affectionate the relationship, loving relationship of everyone who saw Krishna was with Krishna, because the very nature of Krishna is what his name implies, all attractiveness. He is Bhagavan, he who possesses Bhaga, all those things that we consider, if someone has those things, he's considered fortunate in this world, or strength, or beauty, or wealth, or renunciation, or knowledge, and all fame. When someone possesses these things, we're attracted to that person. And Krishna possesses an ocean of all of those, an unlimitedly vast and deep ocean of those. And therefore, that sweetest personality is that person whom everyone falls in love with once they associate with him. So Yudhisthira and his armies accompanied Krishna for a considerable distance, and then eventually Krishna said, please, you go back now. You have your duties to perform. Why should we inconvenience? Of course, they never say, why should we inconvenience you? But now you must go back, because Krishna is thinking the welfare of the devotees. And then the Pandavas were overwhelmed with thoughts of future separation, but they had to go back. And Krishna then proceeded towards Dwarka with his dear companions, his associates who were going with him to Dwarka. So, in this, the last part of chapter 10, the route, the route of the Lord towards Dwarka from Hastinapur, which is Delhi, to the western side of Bharata, is described how they went through different places. And at each place, he stopped at night. He was welcomed. The Lord was welcomed. How fortunate the people were when Krishna and his procession were proceeding towards Dwarka. How fortunate the people were, because they had the opportunity of seeing him making presentations, offering prayers to him. And Krishna himself would stop, and they would set up camp, and he would perform his religious duties. Because Krishna, although the all-powerful, independent personality, always acted in such a way as the perfect leader of all living entities. That is another name of one of the meanings of Bhagavan. It means that he is the leader of all living entities. So as the leader, he always set a good and religious example for the people to follow. Follow his example. But as Prabhupada explains in his purport, as the absolute truth, we should follow his example and his instructions, but we should not imitate. Should not imitate, because after all, he is the absolute truth. He is the Parameshwar. He is the supreme controller. And he can do things that no one else can do. But we should follow his example, so that it takes some intelligence to discriminate between the example, what we can follow, what we should follow, what we must follow, and those things that Krishna does which are not for conditioned souls to follow, like lifting Govardhan Hill. It doesn't take much thought to know that when Krishna does that, we should not follow his example and go around lifting hills. Or the obvious example, other obvious example, is dancing with the gopis in the middle of the night. No. Those activities, when Krishna does them, because he is all powerful, they are most wonderful. And if we would do them, rather than being wonderful, we would become degraded or crushed by the hill. So Krishna left Hastinapur and proceeded slowly towards Dwarka. And then, in the beginning of chapter 11, Sutta Goswami describes how when he reached the border of the most prosperous metropolis, a city of Dwarka, the country of the Anartas, the Lord sounded his conch shell, heralding his arrival and apparently pacifying the dejection of the inhabitants. So the people of Dwarka, they had been in great misery, because, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, the separation that they were feeling when they weren't seeing Krishna, they were missing him so intensely, thinking about him, and just hoping and wondering, when is Krishna returning? Counting the moments, counting the hours, counting the days. Krishna is coming back, Krishna is coming back. Hearing that the battle is over. We heard that Krishna was preparing to leave just after the battle of Kurukshetra. But then Uttaras had some need, and then Kunti offered up prayers, and then Yudhisthira had some need. His dejection, and then Krishna wanted to satisfy Bhishma Dev and glorify Bhishma Dev, and through Bhishma Dev instruct, and then Krishna stayed around still longer to be with Yudhisthira as he began to rule the kingdom, and he stayed around to pacify Subhadra Devi, his sister, whose son Abhimanyu had been killed in the battle, in a glorious way, in the battle of Kurukshetra. So the residents of Dwarka, as Krishna was being practically controlled by the devotees in Hastinapur, their separation and their anticipation for Krishna's return was just simply increasing and increasing and increasing. This is love. And by hearing of these great personalities, we develop our love and anticipation to be with Krishna. Because actually, we are miserable in separation from Krishna. But we have turned our backs so firmly from Krishna that we do not recognize this. And rather, we are thinking, oh, the reason why I'm miserable and I don't is because I don't have enough of this and I don't have enough of that. But actually, even if we had nothing material, like the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they set the example of practically having nothing material, living on nothing, not even knowing where their food was going to come from, living under trees, having no possessions, practically speaking, but being so wealthy and fully satisfied in their love for Krishna. They were considered the richest of all personalities. True wealth. Raghunath Das Goswami left being having opulences and family life, which would be the envy of anyone in the world today, and sitting at Radhakund and crying and crying and crying. Superficially, from the material point of view, people might think, oh, he's crying because he gave up so much. But no, he is crying because he's experiencing love of Radha and Krishna, service of Radha and Krishna in that crying. The Goswami, the Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami gave up everything. Big, big ministers. So people may, and living as mendicants, poverty stricken externally, but actually relishing internally the deepest and highest wealth, fully self-satisfied. So when Krishna came to Dwarka, he removed the apparent anxiety and dejection of the residents. But in that feeling of separation, which was just transferred from the residents of Dwarka to the residents of Hastinapur, in that feeling of separation, there was actually no dejection. There was ecstasy. And in the second verse in the chapter, the white and fat-boweled conchel, being gripped by the hand of Lord Krishna and sounded by him, appeared to be reddened by the touch of his transcendental lips. It seemed that a white swan was playing in the stems of a red lotus flower. So this is a wonderful meditation, a wonderful thought, how Krishna is blowing the conch shell upon the entrance into Dwarka, and that sound vibration is in giving life to the residents of Dwarka. Now there's a metaphor attached to this that Prabhupada explains. The redness of the white conch shell due to the lip touch of the Lord is a symbol of spiritual significance. The Lord is all spirit, and matter is ignorance of this spiritual existence. The Lord is all spirit. That means that everything connected to the Lord is spiritual, and ignorance of that turns spiritual things, Krishna's energy, into matter. Factually, there is nothing like matter in spiritual enlightenment. For one who is enlightened spiritually, there is nothing material. The material world is not the material world. Vishvapurnam sukhayate, Prabodhananda Saraswati said, that the material world for a spiritually exalted person is not a place of misery, it's a place of happiness, because it's not the material world. He's not living in the material world. Factually, there's nothing like matter in spiritual enlightenment, and this spiritual enlightenment takes place at once by the contact of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. So once the contact is established between us and Krishna, fully and deeply, then the material world takes on spiritual significance. The Lord is present in every particle of all existence. And he can manifest his presence in anyone by ardent love and devotional service to the Lord, or in other words, by spiritual contact with the Lord. Everything becomes spiritually reddened, like the conch shell in the grip of the Lord. And the Paramhamsa, or the supremely intelligent person, plays the part of the ducking swan in the water of spiritual bliss, eternally decorated by the lotus flower of the Lord's feet. So because the exalted spiritual personalities, they see everything as Krishna's, and contacted with Krishna, and therefore their expertise, or one of their expertises, is using everything in Krishna's service. And in this way, everything that they do is like diving and surfacing in the waters of spiritual bliss, because everything is decorated with the lotus flower of the Lord's feet. That means that they're always engaging everything in Krishna's service. That nothing, they are not in the material world, because the material world means ignorance. Ignorance means that things are seen as separate from Krishna so that we can enjoy them. But spiritually advanced people see quite differently than this. The citizens of Dwarka, having heard that sound which threatens fear personified in the material world, began to run towards him fast, just to have a long desired audience with the Lord, who is the protector of all devotees. And Prabhupada, in his purport, explains that as the citizens of Dwarka were eager, so eager to associate with Krishna, that we can associate with Krishna too, as taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. And just as the conch shell of the Lord drives away all fear, similarly, if we take shelter of Krishna's names, which are available for us at all times and all places, Itadisi Tava Kripa Bhagavan Mamapi Nam Namakari Bahuda Nivasava Shaktis Tatapita Niyamitas Marane Nakala Itadisi Tava Kripa Bhagavan Mamapi. So we have the opportunity to actually associate with Krishna through his names. And that will drive away all fear. So now the citizens of Dwarka are running towards Krishna. And they brought presents. And they were offering their presents, which really only came from Krishna's mercy, because nothing is separate from the Lord. They were offering Krishna's own potency to Krishna, just like the offering of a lamp is done to the sun. Yet these citizens began to speak in ecstatic language to receive the Lord, just as wards welcome their guardian and father. That's how they were looking at him. Krishna was the protector of the citizens of Dwarka. And they came, when he came, so many offerings. They were so thrilled that the Lord had returned. So now they speak their realizations of who he is. Now, the citizens said, first again, they were not just imagining, they just didn't love their king. And therefore they weren't just flattering him or running to see him because of that. They understood who Krishna was. O Lord, you are worshipped by all demigods like Brahma, the four Shanas, the four Kumaras, and even the King of Heaven. You are the ultimate rest for those who are really aspiring to achieve the highest benefit of life. So just as the ladies of Hastinapur on top of the roofs, they open their words, their prayers, by telling Krishna's actual position, explaining Krishna's actual position, So similarly, the citizens of Dwarka were also opening their words by that, that Krishna is the supreme worshipable object. You are the supreme transcendental Lord. And an inevitable time cannot exert its influence over you. O Creator of the universe, you are our mother, you are our well-wisher, our Lord, our Father, our spiritual master, and worshipable deity. In other words, everything that one should respect and love within this world, the citizens of Dwarka, every superior position, Krishna was the sum total of that, and they were loving Krishna with that type of veneration and affection. And by following it, it is our good luck that we have come again today under your protection by your presence. For your lordship rarely visits even the denizens of heaven, and now it is possible for us to look into your smiling face, which is full of affectionate glances. We can now see your transcendental form, full of all auspiciousness. So this is considered so fortunate when one has the opportunity to see the transcendental form and the transcendental face of Krishna. And how nicely they describe how Hare Krishna. How Krishna, he is Rasa Vigraha. He is the form of all relationships, of all rasas, all sweet tasting mellows of relationship. So they're thinking of their fortune to be able to see the smiling face of the Lord, which is full of affectionate glances. Because they're hoping that Krishna will place his affectionate glance upon them and thus fulfill their desires of their relationship with him. They're explaining their fortune to be under the protection of their Lord. So the Sanskrit word for that, they are now sanata. They are with their Lord. So, interestingly enough, in Sanskrit, the word for orphan is ki. Anata. That means without one's master, without one's Lord. If someone has no protector, he is called anatta. And no matter, and you see this with dogs, if they have no master, they are never happy. So similarly, we are like that. We are now anatta and feeling quite unprotected. Always, it must be like that. We should follow the example of the residents of Dwarka and pray to see the smiling glance of the Lord and become sanata and feel fully protected by the Lord. O lotus-eyed Lord, whenever you go away to Mathura, Vrindavan or Hastinapur to meet your friends and relatives, every moment of your absence seems like millions of years. O infallible one, at that time our eyes become useless, as if bereft of the sun. What a nice example. There is no use to their eyes because, why? Because their eyes are not able to focus, to see the transcendental form of the Lord. So they're considering such eyes that they have that cannot see Krishna as useless. Just like our eyes become useless not able to function properly when the sun is gone. We cannot see despite our eyes. They're useless. So similarly, they are thinking, the residents of Dwarka are thinking, without seeing you, what is the use of our having eyes? Oh, Master, if you live abroad all the time, then we cannot look at your attractive face, whose smiles vanquish all our sufferings. How can we exist without your presence? They're thinking their existence depends fully on Krishna. This is what it means to be a devotee. Upon hearing their speeches, the Lord, who is very kind to the citizens and the devotees, entered the city of Dwarka and acknowledged all their greetings by casting his transcendental glance over them. So he satisfied them. When they say, your beautiful face is full of smiling glances, affectionate glances, they're requesting him to just please look at us with your transcendental eyes and thereby satisfy our heart. And Krishna reciprocated with their desire. Prabhupada explains in the purport, this illusory energy or the curtain of Maya has to be removed. It separates us from Krishna. And when it is so done, the living entity can see the Lord face to face, and all his miseries are at once removed. Every one of us wants to remove the miseries of life, but we do not know how to do it. The solution is given here, and it rests on us to assimilate it or not. Text 11. As Bhogavati, the capital of Nagaloka, is protected by the Nagas, so is Dwarka protected by the descendants of Vishnu, Bhoja, Madhu, Dazaha, Arha, Kukora, and Andaka dynasties, etc., who were as strong as Lord Krishna. Now, it's going to describe further as Krishna first blew his conch shell from outside the city, from the border, and then all the citizens rushed out to see him. Now he's entering the city. Now what did this Dwarka Puri look like? How is it decorated to receive the Lord? The city of Dwarka Puri was filled with the opulences of all seasons. That's the first thing that is described. Because each season has its own sweet opulence and different flowers that bloom. But all the seasons, flowers were blooming in Dwarka. And all the opulences of each season were there. There were hermitages, orchards, flower gardens, parks, and reservoirs of water breeding lotus flowers all over. The city gateway, the household doors, and festooned arches along the roads were all nicely decorated with festive signs like plantain trees and mango leaves, all to welcome the Lord. So these signs and ornaments, accoutrements that were put up throughout the city were all auspicious Vedic symbols. And when one uses these auspicious decorations, the whole atmosphere becomes surcharged with auspiciousness. Very, very easily noticeable too. It is not something that's very esoteric and hard to perceive. Just like when there's a fire sacrifice and there's the coconuts, mantras are invoked, and the fire, holy fire, is lit, and the Shalagram Shila is there, and there are mango leaves and banana trees, something like that, young banana trees, and fruit everywhere, and grains. The whole atmosphere becomes very auspicious and very happy and very rarefied. Because this is the Vedic system. because this auspiciousness is evoked, and it's the auspicious settings are the perfect circumstances to glorify the Lord. And it brings naturally svasti, auspiciousness, brings such happiness to the heart. Flags, garlands, and painted signs and slogans all combined together to shade the sunshine. Prabhupada explains in the purport that the flags had Garuda and Hanuman upon them, because these two great, they're great servitors of the Lord, and the servitor is given so much respect, and that glorifies actually the master. The highways, the subways, the lanes, the markets, and public meeting places were all thoroughly cleansed and then moistened with scented water. And to welcome the Lord, fruits, flowers, and unbroken seeds were strewn everywhere. In each and every door of the residential houses, auspicious things like curd, unbroken fruits, sugarcane, and full water pots with articles for worship, incense, and candles were all displayed. And in this way, when Krishna walked into the city, everything was decorated and the atmosphere was fully auspicious. Why? So that Krishna would be happy. It was a huge festival. Prasadam was being distributed profusely. On hearing that the most dear Krishna was approaching Dwarka Dham, magnanimous Vasudev, Krishna's father, Akrura, Ugrasena, Balaram, the superhumanly powerful one, Prajumna, Charadeshna, and Samba, the son of Jambavati, all extremely happy, abandoned resting, sitting and dying. So whatever anyone was doing, the citizens immediately ran out, and all these respected members, these are all the most respected members of the Yadu dynasty, they all immediately, regardless of what they were doing in the midst of the great festival of Dwarka, how Dwarka was decorated, and then everyone ran out to meet Krishna. They hastened towards the Lord on chariots, with brahmanas bearing flowers. Before them were elephants, emblems of good fortune. Conch shells and bugles were sounded, and Vedic hymns were chanted. Thus they offered their respects, which were saturated with affection. That's Prabhupada's purport. The Vedic way of receiving a great personality creates an atmosphere of respect, which is saturated with affection and veneration for the person received. The auspicious atmosphere of such a reception depends on the paraphernalia described above, including conch shells, flowers, incense, decorated elephants, and the qualified brahmanas reciting verses from the Vedic literatures. Such a program of reception is full of sincerity on the part of both the receiver and the received. So those who are receiving the person, their sincerity of making these arrangements is to bring happiness to that person and to express their happiness in seeing him again. And naturally, this exalted personality feels ingratiated. He feels obliged to the people. So whatever he has, he wants to give them, whether it's blessings or wealth or whatever he wants to distribute in reciprocation, because it's only a cruel and hard-hearted person that does not feel and act upon gratitude. At the same time, many hundreds of well-known prostitutes began to proceed on various vehicles. They were all very eager to meet the Lord, and their beautiful faces were decorated with dazzling earrings, which enhanced the beauty of their foreheads. I'll read the last paragraph of the purport. It appears that the prostitutes of Dwarka, who were so eager to meet the Lord, were all his unalloyed devotees, and thus they were all on the path of salvation according to the above version of the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, the only reformation that is necessary in society is to make an organized effort to turn the citizens into devotees of the Lord. And thus all good qualities of the denizens of heaven will overtake them in their own way. On the other hand, those who are non-devotees have no good qualifications whatsoever, however they may be materially advanced. The difference is that the devotees of the Lord are on the path of liberation, whereas the non-devotees are on the path of further entanglement in material bondage. The criterion of advancement of civilization is whether the people are educated and advanced on the path of salvation. So Prabhupada is making the point that even a person who has a degraded occupation, like a prostitute, if they are devotees, it is just a matter of time before all inauspiciousness, all bad qualities, all degradation is removed from their person. And then they will become exalted personalities. It is just time if they become devotees of the Lord. Because Krishna consciousness is purifying to the heart. Devotional service is the supreme purifying. Niharam eva bhaskaram. Like the sun destroys the fog in the morning. And on the other hand, contrarily, if someone is not a devotee, regardless of what the externals appear like, because he's engaged in materialistic activities, he is simply getting further and further and more deeply entangled in material life. And it is just a matter of time before he is further degraded. So this vision of the absolute nature of devotional service and the all goodness, the auspiciousness of devotional service is actually true vision. It's eternal vision. So everyone was eager to see Krishna due to their great, great overriding affection for him. Expert dramatists, artists, dancers, singers, historians, genealogists, and learned speakers all gave their respective contributions. Being inspired by the superhuman pastimes of the Lord, thus they proceeded on and on. We'll read the next two verses and then read the purport to 21. Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, approached them and offered due honor and respect to each and every one of the friends, relatives, citizens, and all others who came to receive and welcome him. The Almighty Lord greeted everyone present by bowing his head, exchanging greetings, embracing, shaking hands, looking and smiling, giving assurances and awarding benedictions, even to the lowest in rank. So regardless of what one's position is, even if one is at the lowest rank in society, or even if one is the most degraded person, practically speaking, if he approaches the Lord, he will get some auspicious, truly auspicious benediction from the Lord. So this is our only and continuous business. To approach Krishna and gain further benedictions from him. And again, of course, the benedictions that we want from him ought to become more closely engaged in his service, more intimately engaged in his service. More desiring to serve him. That and those are the real benedictions. So even to the lowest rank, regardless of what we are, who we are, how bad we are, how good we are, everyone should just simply approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead and make whatever offerings we can according to our nature, our talents, our abilities, our personality. And let those be offered for Krishna's pleasure and Krishna's glorification. And we will get our reciprocation with Krishna. Prabhupada explains in his purport to 21. The Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, is neither impersonal nor an inert object unable to reciprocate the feelings of his devotees. How horrible is the position of the Mayavadis. Because, by definition, they say that the Lord has no qualities. That means he has no mercy. So they have no one to go to for shelter. Basically, that they think that God is nothing, so they get an appropriate response from God. They get nothing. They get an impersonal response because they think he's impersonal. They get nothing in return from him. No help. But here it describes how the Lord reciprocates the feelings of his devotees. This is actually the secret of Krishna consciousness. That Krishna reciprocates with our desires. Yayatamam prapadyante. He reciprocates just as it behooves with his different types of admirers and devotees. Of course, the pure devotees are of one type only because they have no other object for service but the Lord. And therefore, the Lord also reciprocates with such pure devotees just as it behooves. Namely, he is always attentive to all the matters of his pure devotees. Because they give everything to Krishna, he gives everything to them. There are others who designate him as impersonal, and so the Lord also does not take any personal interest. He satisfies everyone in terms of one's development of spiritual consciousness, and a sample of such reciprocation is exhibited here with his different welcomers. Then the Lord personally entered the city accompanied by elderly relatives, invalid brahmanas with their wives, who were all offering benedictions and singing the glories of the Lord. Others also praised the glories of the Lord. When Lord Krishna passed over the public roads, all the ladies from the respectable families of Dwarka went up to the roofs of their palaces just to have a look at the Lord. They considered this to be the greatest festival. So Prabhupada, in his purport, important purport, he describes the importance of festivals in the temple. Because unless our mind becomes attracted to the festivals and the deities in the temple, our mind is bound to become attracted to the false festivals of the material world. And the last verse we'll read today, 25. So the inhabitants of Dwarka were greatly accustomed to look upon the reservoir of all beauty, the infallible Lord, yet they were never satiated. Here's Prabhupada's purport. When the ladies of the city of Dwarka got up on the roofs of their palaces, they never thought that they had previously many times seen the beautiful body of the infallible Lord. This indicates that they had no satiation in desiring to see the Lord. Everything material seen for a number of times ultimately becomes unattractive by the law of satiation. The law of satiation acts materially, but there is no scope for it in the spiritual realm. The word infallible is significant here, because although the Lord has mercifully descended on earth, he is still infallible. He never falls. He is never on earth. The living entities are fallible because when they come in contact with the material world, they lack their spiritual identity. And thus the body materially obtained becomes subjected to birth, growth, transformation, situation, deterioration, and annihilation under the laws of nature. The Lord's body is not like that. He descends as he is, and is never under the laws of the material modes. His body is the source of everything that be, the reservoir of all beauties beyond our experience. No one, therefore, is satiated by seeing the transcendental body of the Lord, because there are always manifestations of newer and newer beauties. It means that Krishna is unlimitedly beautiful, unlimitedly wonderful. He has unlimited attractive qualities, exactly the opposite of those things in the material world. So we have to turn our glance from matter to Krishna and think about what we hear about Krishna, think about the beauty of Krishna, think about the actual nature of the material world. And we will get and discuss these things amongst the devotees. His body is the source of everything that be, the reservoir of all beauties beyond our experience. No one, therefore, is satiated by seeing the transcendental body of the Lord, because there are always manifestations of newer and newer beauties. The transcendental name, form, qualities, entourage, etc., are all spiritual manifestations. And there is no satiation in chanting the holy name of the Lord. There is no satiation in discussing the qualities of the Lord. And there is no limitation of the entourage of the Lord. He is the source of all and is limitless. What is the meaning of there is no limitation of the entourage of the Lord? Yeah, that means that if we become devotees, also, there's still a place for us. So we don't have to worry. If we can accept the fact that we won't be number one amongst the devotees, that all the top positions are filled, and we're just one of the limitless devotees of the Lord. But Krishna is so amazing that he can reciprocate with each one personally. But we have to accept that, really speaking, we have nothing to offer Krishna because he has unlimited servitors. This is very hard for the false ego to accept, because we like to think that Krishna is getting a great deal, a great bargain, a great something wonderful by us becoming devotees. But actually, Krishna isn't getting anything, and all we actually have to offer him is our own individuality, our own affection. That is what he wants. That is what he appreciates. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions? We have a few minutes. Questions or comments? Yeah.
Due to my condition,
yeah,
sometimes I might feel inappropriate to surrender.
I'm familiar with that one.
Is that based on, what is it?
What is it? It's illusion, because we're already surrendered to Krishna. We already have a relationship with Krishna. We can't avoid being in his service, but we either serve him indirectly or directly. But I think that the problem that we face is that our affection for him isn't strong enough, because we think of surrender as some type of slavery, because without the love, there is no meaning to the service that we're expected to do. It's like factory work or something, except that you don't get off at nine, you don't go 9 to 5. It's 24 hours a day for eternity. But that's not actually what it is. It's based on spontaneous affection for Krishna. Then naturally, acting for Krishna's pleasure, making our will, our desire, one with his desire, that's what surrender is.
I heard that. I mean, the proper use of our independence is to give it up in Krishna's.
But that doesn't mean to give it up. It doesn't mean to give up our individuality. It means the proper use of our individuality is to give up our independence, our aversion to Krishna. Hey, someone who looks just like you just walked out that door. Do you have a brother or something? Have a seat. No. Okay. Hare Krishna. Come again. You're always welcome. So our individuality is best used when it's used in the service of Krishna with affection. Yeah, now independence from Krishna is to be given up, but our individuality is not to be, it can't be given up.
We don't have to give up anything. Just have to take Krishna.
But we need some training for that. Because we're so used to being independent.
Is it Western culture means independence, means individuality, means independence?
Means doing whatever you want, when you want to do it, regardless of what anyone else wants. Yeah, that's how we've been brought up. That's the milk that we've been nurtured on. So if we have problems with the concept, it's to no wonder, but what removes the problems is the, in my opinion, is the concept of affection. Because it's natural to use who you are and what you are in the, to please someone who you love. That's natural. And to not do that is unnatural. So we're in a very unnatural state, and Western culture makes us more and more unnatural, because despite all the independence that people have,